This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes. It's pretty rare where we get like a follow-up from a movie into a show. And in these cases, do we need to see more of the world in the TV show? And I think that's a pretty cool concept to explore more of the characters in the TV format. It has that power to develop some characters or to explore more things. But in these cases, it's like, do we really need it? So for example, Megamind, the movie was like done, finished. That was amazing. But then it got a TV show and a movie, and that was abysmal. Like, the animation wasn't there. They lacked all the personalities on the characters. And it was like, why do we need this? But here, this was so surprising for me because I'm like worried, like, okay, how are they going to follow up from the movie? Because if you haven't seen the movie, it's great. The movie was awesome. It was such a vibe. It's such a fun show to watch.
I agree. I think that this is such a great opportunity to expand upon the universe. I mean, I'm actually looking at it right now, and we did Mutant Mayhem almost exactly a year ago. We did it on the 3rd of September. So just literally 1 week and a year ago, we did that. It was our episode of the fourth year of the podcast. And this is the final episode of the fourth year. Very strange coincidence, a very nice little bookend. But yeah, what I think is really cool about this is that we get to slow down and stretch out a little bit. We got 12 episodes here where we can dig into this universe and these characters more. And it was just so much fun. We are getting a sequel to Mutant Mayhem in 2026, but nice. It's great that we're not going to be waiting for 3 years to get the sequel, at least not entirely. We're going to get these other adventures a year later. You know, maybe, I don't know if we're going to get a season two of this show, but maybe a season two a year after that, like in 2025. And you know, John, it's been a rough week. After The Acolyte was cancelled, a really rough one for me. I kind of felt like I needed this show. Sometimes, like, a show that means a lot to people, it isn't given the chance to blossom, to continue. The Acolyte got a lot of backlash from the worst side of Star Wars fandom. You know, it faced a lot of bigotry, and cancelling it sends a certain message that the groups who felt represented by the series didn't have a place in the fandom. You know, it was a depressing Tuesday.
I know, British person's day, like, oh, it's a depressing Tuesday, isn't it?
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah.
I even considered not talking about Tales of the Turtles, you know, instead talking about the state of Star Wars, because I thought it's a worrying time. But then I thought, you know, I'll give the show a go. And I was just swept up by how fun it was. Like, it immediately made me feel better. I felt like I was swept up into just a simpler time when I was younger and watching TMNT. I felt like a kid again. Like, I just come home from school, you know, turned on the TV and watched an episode of this show. Like, it really nailed that episodic Saturday morning cartoon feel, even with those little, like, gaps for adverts. So I decided to talk about this show, not only because it's wonderful and fun and cool, but no one is talking about it. I haven't heard a single other person talk about how amazing this series is, and it deserves more attention.
It is very strange when this looks incredible, by the way. And when people talked about Batman Caped Crusader, it was like the animation side to it, and the Batman should not have any excuses when this looks amazing. With the animation, it just feels alive, it feels like it's upbeat. The movie in this one was definitely influenced by anime as well, and it's just really cool to see that it's crossed between the comic book style, and it's just so bizarre. I didn't see people like on Twitter or Instagram or YouTube or anything, and it's just so very, because this is so much fun. Why isn't anyone talking about it? We're the ones that just recognize how fun this show is, and we're just like, hey, did anyone watch this? And like, no. Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
I feel like it's great that we've discovered this show, but at the same time, this video is gonna absolutely flop. Like, I do not expect this one to do very well at all. Fingers crossed. Obviously,
imagine it does amazing and then people watch the show because of this.
Thousands of people, it's millions,
thousands of people, or just a few people just like, wow, these two nerds talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and trying to persuade me to watch the show. Wow, YouTube, you've done it again.
I mean, that is the goal here. Let's persuade people to watch this show, because yeah. I feel like, you know, you're right. The simplistic animation style, you know, it's 2D, it's hand-drawn like a comic. And I think there's some really expressive moments during the action, especially. I think you're right. It feels very anime inspired, but it also feels like a smaller version of Mutant Mayhem. Like, while still looking excellent, it's definitely appropriate for the tone and the stakes. And there's a lot of moments when each of the turtles will narrate something or will see something from their point of view. And they all animate it differently. Like, Donnie has like this kind of video game style pixelated view, whereas Leonardo draws things like a comic book, much like how he narrates in the movie itself. Really small things, but really effective in building yeah. this world and crafting it and showing all these different animation styles. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, and that format of storytelling in those early episodes, I thought that was great. You get to see those perspectives of each of the turtles, and I think that is a really fun way to tell their stories and also to tell their sibling like brotherhood. Each one of them want to be great, and also they want to have fun as well and purposely trying to make fun of each other. And I think that is a really great way to show that they really care for each other. And it's great to see styles as well. Yeah, it's just so cool. I'm really glad they just put so much effort into those details. And the comedy, by the way, it works so well. There's so many things that are going on, but it just makes it feel real. And I gotta say, it's done really well. The characteristics and the personalities from each of the turtles from the movie into here and expand it. And it was smooth callbacks from the movie talking about like that giant monster that attacked New York. And it was great to expand that kind of arc of like they're famous and does it have consequences? I say this is excellent stuff to see this.
Yeah, it's a massive relief that the series doesn't decide to just backtrack Mutant Mayhem, you know, to make the city hate the turtles again and have them living in the shadows. They keep things moving and they allow the emotional catharsis of Mutant Mayhem's ending to last. Obviously, we are getting a sequel to that and maybe a season 2 of this. And I think it's a great idea to expand the turtles in stories they can tell over a long period and then do like the big stuff in the films. I think it's a really great thing that, you know, we get 2 main arcs in this show, and both of the arcs, the catalyst of the Mechazoid arc and the fish arc, is Superfly attacking New York and the titular Mutant Mayhem. I really loved that idea that we can expand on all of those things without having to say, yeah, we're going back to the status quo. That stuff is really great. And we get to see the cast back. This is hilarious, as you're saying. And I think that a big part of that is because the cast are back. It's small things, but it gives it that continuity with Mutant yeah. Mayhem. I mean, I was worried they wouldn't get Io Edebiri back, but they did. And she's as funny and sharp as ever. You know, the yeah. actors who play the turtles, I love their dynamic. And they just feel like teens who are often out of their depth. Just because they completed their arcs in Mutant Mayhem and they feel accepted, that doesn't mean they're perfect. I think it makes them much more interesting to watch that we get to see them struggle with their own thing. And a really fun thing that I loved about the cast is that they clearly couldn't get Jackie Chan back as Splinter. So instead of recasting him, they have him speak vermin yeah. the whole time, which is a really inventive little way to have him like in the story without having to recast. And then they have yes. him dubbed by Raphael doing a Batman voice. And it's just so gloriously over the top. I loved it.
That was a great, not detail. It is kind of like a detail, but it's just they couldn't get Jackie Chan to come back for that. But then again, it is just a voice acting that just really complements the personalities of each of the characters from the movie. It's a great iteration of this world of the Teenage Mutant the Turtles and, you know, April O'Neil.
It's been a year and you still can't get it.
Okay. It's been a year, the Turtles, you know, with the Turtles and April O'Neil. And I think, you know, the movie just sets that up really well for them. But here with the TV show, it's just really nice to see that voice acting again and just have fun with it. Again, there's so many things that are going on with the comedy, but it's excellent in that way. And it really reminded me of Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs with that yeah. kind of vibe. And Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. Like those things that references, like the video yeah. games that here and here. It's not a bad thing. It's an excellent thing to like have that dialogue going. There's nothing wasted. And again, I don't want to make comparisons, but Batman Caped Crusader had like moments that wasn't enough energy to drive it. And again, it's the animation that kind of like drags that as well. But this in Turtles, it's just so fun just to see it, and it keeps moving and you're not really bored. And the pacing is just excellent.
Yeah, the structure of the series, it takes full advantage of the format. Like, you know, like many TV spin-offs, we have more time to tell individual smaller stories, and they absolutely do. The first four episodes split the gang up, and we get, you know, individual episodes about Leo, Mikey, Raph, Donnie, all one after another. It expands what we saw in Mutant Mayhem, but it's also just fun to see them developed individually amidst this world that feels so alive. It carries the world building of Mutant Mayhem within the animation, even in the smallest ways, to the background characters and civilians, and they all have tons of personality. They all look distinct and weird in their own delightful ways. The show also looks disgusting, just like the film did. It's gross, it's a bit gnarly, and that's kind of what you want. And all of, like, the civilians, all the background stuff, they get their little moment to shine and be funny. It's all dripping with personality and character. And personally, I preferred the Mechazoid arc to the fish arc, but in the fish arc, I love getting more from the mutants. We get to spend more time with Wingnut and Leatherhead and Genghis Frog and Ray Filet, and it's just great to see more of them all. Like, you know, we get to see some of their insecurities, you know, as mutants and as people, I guess. You know, it's fun again, and they didn't drop things from Mutant Mayhem, and it's all, like, you know, flavors of classic Turtles action, and it takes everything from the film and it runs with it. And again, presumably they didn't have John Cena and Seth Rogen as Rocksteady and Bebop, but they're like, okay, we don't have to do the big heavy hitting characters. We're not about to introduce Krang. Here's Leatherhead, and we're gonna somewhat tackle their insecurities about being a mutant alligator. That stuff is really effective.
Yeah, and, you know, with that mutant arc, I thought that was really effective because they actually thought about the catalyst from the movie. Because I think many films and TV shows, when it transitions onto there, they go back from the start. They always go back from the idea of, like, okay, nobody likes them again. What was that? And it just makes it harder for us. Like, those who watch the movie, everyone liked them, so developed them. And here, I think the idea of they're famous and now the mutants are getting recognition, that was great. But the Mechazoid arc was great. That had so many connections, you know, from the first episode, which is really cool. It's like those moments that you don't think they're key, but they are, for each of the characters to understand their purpose or their ideas for those four episodes. I really liked Leonardo's arc in that first episode. Is he better without the Turtles, or is he better with the Turtles? And it's like that idea of he's just Leonardo. Leonardo's a great character if you haven't seen much of the Turtles as well. But my favorite is Michelangelo. He's always been my favorite. Who's your favorite?
I mean, it's Leo, man. I absolutely adore, you know, the leader of the four. It differs in different iterations of the Turtles, but in this one specifically, he's the one who has, like, the little crush on April. I think that's so fun. I love how he's constantly being expected to come up with the ideas, but he doesn't really know what to do. There's a great moment where I can't remember what exactly he says, but in the fish arc, he's standing on top of, like, some rubble, and he's like, let's go get him. And everyone's like, come on, you're not Batman. He's like, I'm Batman. It's just really funny. And there's some really, like, endearing moments. All the Turtles. I mean, Mikey, I love how his whole thing in the first arc is like, what do I do? Leo's the leader. Donnie's the tech guy. Raph's yeah. angry. What am I for? And we get to see that he kind of has that kind of human connection. He births Pigeon Pete, and he
Pigeon
has that
Pete,
whole thing.
My favorite.
Yes.
My favorite. Pigeon
and
Pete.
He has this whole thing with Rod and all this. It's really great to see all those things developed. And each episode we get some really cool action. Like, Donnie has this whole episode on a speeding train, which I thought was so exciting. And using that space, like the train and the subway, that's all we're not really leaving that area. Having him fighting a Mechazoid and trying to stop the train and trying to also reprogram is just really cool throughout. They're really creative in what they decide to do. They can stretch out a really cool action sequence for 20 minutes and it doesn't feel like we're wasted. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's going on for too long.
Yeah, and Raph, I think that was the funniest.
Yes.
With the chickens. I did not expect that. Raph gets locked up into this chicken warehouse. He fights, who's the guy that keeps all of the chickens?
Yeah, the purple gang or something.
Yeah, it's the purple dragon gang.
Yes, that's right. It's not the purple hand gang from Horrid Henry.
Oh, the purple hand gang. Oh, that takes me back. Yeah, the chicken. That was interesting to explore this character who loves chickens. I forgot his name, but he really loves chickens and he really cares about them. And it's like, okay, he's good. But then what Raph's purpose, you know, idea of like how to be better was like, you know, just be nice and, you know, tell a few jokes. It was like one of those weird episodes that you have no idea where it's going, like chicken with arms and, you know, just trying to save them. But then the guy really loves chicken, but then he's like, don't be mean about chickens. That was a funny episode.
Yeah, it's all really fun. And I think that's great that we retain that quality. It doesn't get too dark or, you know, too serious at any point. And I generally wonder whether this series across TV or films, whether they will get dark at any point. But right now, I do enjoy just having fun with these characters, not taking things too seriously. But we do get some actually surprisingly emotional stuff with the villains.
Yeah.
Bishop, who's the villain.
Bishop,
who made all the Mechazoids. She has this kind of tragic backstory. But then for me, it was the fish. The three fish, I can't remember their gang name, but they were the ones who actually really emotional. Like, Goldfin had this really depressing tale about how they were mutated and all of the other fish rejected them. And he was so hell-bent on power and feeling powerful. I really enjoyed that. And he kind of forms this family dynamic with the other two fish. But they eventually split as a family, and it's sad, John. It made me feel things.
Oh my God, you feel things. Oh my God, yeah. You are human.
well, that's good.
I mean, I cry. I didn't cry at this, but I cry at the most easy things. I think that emotional moment with Bishop, you know, telling about her backstory about her sister, and then she wanted to make a better future for people with robotics. I think that was a great character to look into. And then that whole dream is crushed by that monster. And that drive for that character, that motivation, was a great backstory. We understood. We're like, wow, okay, that is great to see about that. And then there was a great moment where the turtles actually get to meet Bishop for the first time, and they have this emotional conversation about Bishop's sister, but also like this truce they're gonna have. Those moments are key to like understand about the villains. The villains are just human beings at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And these villains aren't one and done as well. There are little teasers at the end of each arc. Goldfin survived the explosion, and Bishop gets approached by the defenders of Earth or something. That's really interesting. You know, potentially in one of the movies or in season two, we're going to see more of that, which I think is really cool. It makes this world feel a bit more alive. And I want to say the crime boss that Goldfin teams up with is in Mutant Mayhem, is one of the bosses that they beat up in the No Diggity sequence.
And I
saw that, and it's the same design. It's like, wow, it just makes this world feel so much more cohesive that he's still around. He's still doing his nefarious deeds. It's really great. And, you know, in this space of 12 episodes, we do get two really good arcs in here. You know, if you compare this to like the Tales of series in Star Wars, for instance, they get 3 episode arcs that feel really kind of sporadic and struggle with their coherence. And this does the opposite. The arcs are 6 episodes each. They give each turtle a lot of time to shine. They develop the world, the side characters, you know, and the villains. And both have a lot to say about the nature of life, intelligence, control, and the rights of mutants and humans. I did think those themes were more potent and effective in the Mechazoid arc rather than the fish one. But I think this series really nailed the Tales of vibe that I feel Star Wars hasn't grasped as well.
Yeah, I think it's important. If you want to do like Tales, you would have to think carefully and not have a sporadic, you know, you want to have that consistent flow with the characters and where to go with them. And there are shows that have like an episodic element to it, like Cowboy Bebop. I can't mention an anime without Cowboy Bebop. It's just an episodic story. And what it does is they show you everything, but they have that emotional connection, you know, with these characters. And here, I think you kind of get to see that as well. And I think that is a great thing to do if you're doing the Tales thing, to expand or come across something that you haven't done, or not to repeat that side of the story. It's great to have that. This is great. I want more of this type of shows that you just keep going, like Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. It's so much fun.
Oh, well, you're going to love what we're doing next week then, but not yet, John. Not yet.
you tease me.
There's a moment where Wingnut thinks she's about to die and just says, I'll never finish One Piece. And I just thought of you. I was like, that is 100% your fault.
Yeah, I was about to say it. I was like, I'm never going to finish One Piece. Thankfully, I'm almost caught up with the current arc. So I was like, oh my God, that feels so real. Like, there's so many things you think about when there's TV shows that they're so long, but you want to finish them because people said it's great. That is a real feeling that, and I felt like, wow, I felt seen. I felt seen right there. Wow. Oh my
I'm
God.
I'm happy for you. I'm really happy for you. To kind of close out, I want to ask two things. Number one, do you think this series is, like, where do you think it stands in relation to the film? Is it better than the film, worse than the film? And where do you want Ooh. This franchise to go next? Is there anyone from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles canon that you want to see brought in for the film or for the subsequent series?
That's a great question. Okay, for the first one, I think the movie's better, not to diss the TV show. The TV show is really fun. It's excellent. I highly recommend it if you want some fun. It's kind of equal, but I just got to say the movie is better because it just has so many moments to shine. Like that whole montage with the song where they fight against the crime bosses. That is an excellent theme. If you haven't watched it, please, please watch the movie. It's great. And the second one, I would love to see Shredder. I would love to see Shredder in this. He's a great character. But I know that we are getting The Last Ronin.
Yes, a live action version, which is like a post-apocalyptic. There's only one turtle left and, you know, you don't know who it is. And that's a really interesting concept, I think. We'll definitely cover that when that comes out.
Okay, what about you, Tom?
Well, I agree with you pretty much on both of those things, actually. I think that it is not as good as the film, but they're basically on equal standing. I'm so happy to just have more from this world. I would take seasons of this. Give me, you know, six seasons in a movie, you know, six movies in six seasons. Like, I just think there's so much to do, so many places to go. And even if no one's talking about it, I hope this series does do well so they make more.
Yeah, there's so many things in this show that just connects. Right? To like other fandoms as well, like One Piece or like Attack on Titan or films as well, they reference in this show. Like, bro, where are they? Where are the people that just...
I know. It is mad. And you know, with all the things they set up, you know, with Goldfin surviving and Bishop being recruited, I do want to see those stories continue. But I agree with you. Shredder is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles villain. Obviously, there are different villains out there. There are bigger and more threatening, arguably. But Shredder is like the one, especially commercially. I do appreciate that this series isn't being like, first film, it's Shredder. You know, a lot of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles films and TV shows are like immediately Shredder and the Foot Clan, but we can build up to it. So I'm happy to wait. Give us some, maybybe Bebop and Rocksteady have their villainous stint. Maybe we see Krang or something. There's numerous places we can go. Yeah. So Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, what do you give it out of 10?
An 8.
Me too. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And John, that's 4 years of the podcast. Stop laughing. That's 4 years of the podcast.
I'm sorry. It's just the way that you went. Okay.
I don't even know if that would have picked up on the mic, but yes, that's 4 years of the podcast, my friend. That is
wow.
That's
wow.
it. 209 episodes. We did it. We're still going. I don't know.
It
sounds like we finished. We're not finished, but like
we're not finished.
Another milestone. Thank you, everyone. You know, the last 8 months, essentially, we've been on a roll.
Yeah.
Every video has hit over 100 views. And to some people, that might not seem like a lot. But to us, that's like, wow, that's really cool. You know, we've had some really well-performing videos. We've had a lot of comments, a lot of hate. It's just been great to have a conversation going. You know, I've been really proud. And there's no one I'd rather go through it than with my co-host, John. So thanks, John. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Oh, no, thank you, Tom. It's great to, you know, yap about stuff with film. And TV shows with you. We've started like talking for such a long time from the early days, and we're thinking, could we just talk about films on a podcast? So it's just really nice to develop this channel and then just yap about everything. So it's just so much fun.
One day we'll be in the same room. One day we'll be able to see each other again.
But anyway, what are we do next week? What are we do next week, Tom?
Well, next week is another animated series. It's Terminator Zero.
Yes. Oh my God. It looks crazy.
It does look crazy. Yes. So you can send us an email at asktimefilmpod@gmail.com. We'll be recording next Saturday. So let us know your thoughts on Terminator Zero by then, and we'll answer it right here on the podcast next week.
Very interested to see how they're going to do a Terminator. And you can follow us on Instagram at outoftimefilmpod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Aswell, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to LJ Smith for the excellent theme and Roland Phillips vocals as always. And I think that's everything. Take what you're given.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.